Welcome to the second hour's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Court of Appeals in Odessa Wednesday by Kim Smith. The three justices from the 11th Texas Court of Appeals in Eastland will make a trip to Odessa this week to hear arguments in two separate cases. Many of Texas's 14 counts of appeals make an effort to hear arguments outside their home court at least once or twice a year. Chief Justice John Bailey and Justices Stacy Trotter and Bruce Williams will be in Exeter County District Court to hear two cases on Wednesday morning. One of the cases, Dark Horse Water versus Birch Operations, originated in Martin County. According to the online record from the 118th Judicial Court, the two parties are arguing over the rights to parcel of land. Dark Horse Water attorney consisted of Billy Pat McCaskill, owns an undivided 20% of the surface estimate in certain lands in Martin County and signed a 5-year agreement with Darkwater, giving them exclusive rights to drill water wells to produce and dispose of wastewater on the property and to sell produced water and hydraulics. However, 2 years into their agreement, Birch Operations filed documents claiming McCaskill also gave them some of the same rights she'd given to Dark Horse. Both parties filed motions for a summary judgment, and Yates sided with Birch Operations. Dark Horse is now appealing. The second matter the justices will hear involves the parent company of the Odessa American, AIM Media, and the City of Odessa. AIM Media filed a lawsuit against the City of Odessa in Exeter County District Court nearly 3 years ago, alleging the city was violating the Texas Public Information Act by not releasing public crime records in a timely manner, and the city was also violated the laws by redacting basic public information, such as the nature of the calls, addresses, and suspect names. The OA provided several examples of reports that were released months after the event and filed with redactions. The City of Odessa tried to get the lawsuit dismissed, stating the court lacked judiciation because the city was immune from the lawsuit. A visiting judge denied the motion, and the 11th Court of Appeals upheld the decision. However, earlier this year, a judge did dismiss the lawsuit, declaring the issue moot because the city had ultimately provided the newspaper with the police records it had requested. AIM Media has asked the 11th Court of Appeals to find the city did violate the TPIA and to issue an order prohibiting them from doing so in the future. The Odessa American's claims are not moot because the city failed to comply with the TPIA. It's likely to recur to evade review, Attorney Nesh Jobles wrote in the appellate brief. In addition, AIM Media is seeking attorney fees. Chief Justice Bailey was appointed to the 11th Court of Appeals 9 years ago by Governor Rick Perry. He's been Chief Justice since September 2018. He practiced trial and appellate law in Abilene several years before becoming a staff attorney in the 11th Court of Appeals in 2001. Justice Trotter spent 20 years with the Schaefer Law Firm in Odessa before appointed to serve as judge in the 244th County District Court in Perry in 2004. He returned to private practice for a few years and then was elected to serve as judge in the 358th Exeter County District Court in 2014. He began serving on the 11th Court of Appeals in December 2020. Justice Williams practiced civil law as a member of the Cotton Bledsoe Tie in Dawson in Midland for 38 years. He's certified by the Texas Board of Legal Specialization in Personal Injury Law for cause on product liability defense, and he's certified in civil trial law, focusing on commercial business and oil and gas litigations. He was elected to the 11th Court of Appeal in November 2020. PHS student arrested. ECISD police arrested a freshman at Permian High School on Friday for telling another student he will have his brother come and shoot him. The boy faces the Class A misdemeanor, threat or exhibition of a firearm in a school or bus, a news release said. Odessan gets 40 years in kidnapping. The Odessa man who kept his girlfriend hostage at gunpoint for several hours last year was sentenced to 40 years in prison Thursday. Took the jury just 30 minutes Wednesday to convict Nathan Sandoval, 25, of aggravated assault with a deadly weapon and aggravated kidnapping with a deadly weapon in connection with two incidents that took place in March of 2021. Sandoval has been facing 25 years to life in prison. He'll be eligible for parole after several half serving half of his sentence. Sandoval maintained his innocence throughout the trial, suggesting his victim and her family set him up. Assistant County Attorney Kevin Schultz and Henry Eccles presented evidence Sandoval was upset the mother of the child, Abigail Labia, wanted nothing to do with him upon the release from prison and was angered she'd taken a job at Jaguars, an adult entertainment club. Jurors heard testimony. He pointed a gun at Levy's brother, demanding to know where she was one night. 36 hours later, shot out the windows of her car in the process of kidnapping her. Leva testified that during her five-hour ordeal, she was terrified for her life, and she shared with jurors threatening texts he sent her in the days leading up to the kidnapping and the months it took to find him afterwards. In seeking a lengthy sentence for Leva, Schultz presented jurors' court documents showing Sandoval's conviction for such crimes as possession of marijuana, resisting arrest, evading police with a vehicle, providing police false identification, and unlawful possession of a body armor by a felon. He also went into multiple-time jailers, found items in his cell that could be used as weapons, including screws and razors. Sandoval has twice served prison sentences after failing to successfully complete probation. The kidnapping happened 5 days after he was released the second time. Jurors also learned Ector County Sheriff's Office detention officers found letters in the cell in which he was trying to convince someone to kill Leva and her brother prior to the trial. The letters had discussed Sandoval's plan to escape. Leva positively identified the handwriting on the letters as Sandoval's. Former detention officer Manuel Escamilla testified he found a metal shower rack hidden in Sandoval's mattress, razors secreted in a pair of boxers and screws that had been removed from the locking mechanism on Sandoval's cell door. "I'm going to kill thee," expletive. "I'm going to use you and whoever I'm going to stop until she's dead, and not until somebody kills me," Sandoval wrote in one of the letters. Sandoval told the intended receipt of the letters where Leva and her brother Adrian worked and where Adrian Leva drove. He also told them to kill the pair in front of his daughter, who is now 4. Sandoval wrote that after his escape, he knew someone with a lot of cash and $300,000 worth of gold and silver he could rob. During the questioning from the defense attorney, Jonathan Curry, a tearful Leva, acknowledged their daughter loves Sandoval, misses him, and cries out for him. Curry pointed out Leva wasn't physically injured in March of 2021 and asked Leva for proof Sandoval had threatened her. An incredulous Leva reminded Curry of the text messages and gestured toward the jail cell letters. "Do you believe Nathan loves his daughter?" Curry asked. "That doesn't seem like love," Leva cried out, again pointing at the letters. When Sandoval took the stand, he described his past criminal convictions as youthful indiscretions, although he thought he knew it was all back then. Sandoval told Curry that while in prison, he took numerous classes, became a barber, and was respected by inmates and guards alike. Both times he was released from prison, he said he was determined to be a better man and father. He got a bulletproof vest jacket after he was released from prison the first time because, as a felon, he isn't allowed to own guns and wanted to make sure that he would be there for his daughter if he got shot, Sandoval said. "That's a lot of crazy people out there," Sandoval said. His plan was his release from prison in March 2021 was to get commercial driver's license, Sandoval testified. His mother and daughter picked him up from the Greyhound station, and he spent the next few days playing with this little girl and taking her to pre-K outfits. "Things went downhill, though," he said. "He didn't know Abigail was mad at me for the fact that I had another child after their daughter was born," Sandoval said. When he gets to prison this time, Sandoval says he's worked on getting his general equivalency diploma and many certificates as he can. "I'd like to ask y'all to please show leniency on me. I hope you can find it in your hearts to give me a minimum so I can come out and be a better man and a better daddy to my daughter," Sandoval said. He said nobody is perfect. During the cross-examination of Schultz, Sandoval reiterated it was Leva who came on to him and said he wasn't thinking about the age difference when he and Leva began their relationship. So it's her fault. "Your blank became erected and entered her blank," Schultz asked. "No comment," Sandoval said. Sandoval again denied kidnapping Leva or threatening her via text or video. "The video of a man in a Day of the Mask wearing gun and threatening Leva didn't show my face and doesn't sound anything like me," Sandoval says. After his second release from prison, Sandoval said, Leyva was sending people to him to go harass him and get me out of character. He only showed up at Leyva's brother's apartment to set things straight by telling Leyva he didn't want to rekindle their relationship. He only wanted to co-parent with her. At first, Sandoval told Schultz he ran from police the day of the arrest in April 2021 because he didn't know they were police and he didn't know their intentions. He then said he ran because he didn't want to be accused of something he didn't do. He also told jurors Leyva lied when she said that her first prison term, he collected guns, struck her with a samurai sword, and pointed a gun at her grandfather and toddler one day. He repeatedly denied the later incident until Schultz pulled out a sheriff's office report about the incident. He said the sword incident was irrelevant because Leyva couldn't prove it. Sandoval said someone else wrote the letters found in his cell. Someone else removed the screws and were found in his jailer's vault, and he didn't collect the razors that were discovered. He called the Ector County jail system corrupt. He also said there's nothing in the jail rules that say that he can't use power sockets and wires to heat up coffee and cook in his cell. Yes, he did stick a plastic item into the locking mechanism on the door last December, Sandoval said. He wanted to take 2 showers a day, and the jailmate wouldn't let him. So you're going to do what you want to do. To heck with the rules, right? Schultz asked him. When he cold-cocked another inmate, Sandoval said, it was because the jailer had improperly housed him with a child molester. They were wrong and on their end, Sandoval said. When asked how he could judge a suspect child molester when he himself began having sex with Leyva when she was just 14, Sandoval replied, I don't feel like that's because it was nothing like that, sir. Obituary. Odessa. Jerry A. Howell, age 80, passed away Monday, December 5th. In Odessa, Texas. Jerry was born October 10, 1942, in Bowles Mills, Louisiana, to Mavis and Dewey Howell. Jerry's cowboy lifestyle of living led him to be a traveling man and living in many places. He worked the majority of his life as an insulator, but he also worked on the Alaskan Pipeline, owned and operated a bar, the London Pub in London, Texas, was owner of J&B Insulation, worked as a salesperson for Langtree Rock Company, and eventually retired in Langtree, Texas, where he owned and operated Jerry's Wagon Wheel convenience store, motel, fuel, and pool room. He was known for the only store for miles that was down the street by the Judge Roy B. Museum. Jerry eventually returned back to home to Odessa due to health reasons to be with his family, where he remained until the time of his death. Jerry enjoyed traveling up and down the highways, tending to his garden when his health was good, and playing cards with his friends in the store. Graveside services will be held at 1 p.m. on Monday, December 12th, at China Creek Cemetery in San Saba, Texas. The family would like to thank Dr. J.B. Naidu, Dr. Ralph Sepero, Dr. Kaviar Dar, and the Medical Center Hospital and Focus Care at Odessa for giving to Jerry during his final months here on Earth. Death notices. Odessa. Donna Sue Wood Wilson, 63, of Odessa, died Tuesday, December 6th, in Odessa. Memorial service will be held at 10 Monday, December 12th, at Acres West Funeral Chapel. Matt Wilson will be officiating. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Odessa American for Monday, December 12th. Oil spill in rural Kansas Creek shuts down Keystone Pipeline. An oil spill in a creek in northeastern Kansas shut down a major pipeline that carries oil from Canada to the Texas Gulf Coast, briefly causing oil prices to rise on Thursday. Canada-based TC Energy said it shut down its Keystone system Wednesday night following a drop in pipeline pressure. It said oil spilled into a creek in Washington County, Kansas, about 150 miles northwest of Kansas City. The company on Thursday estimated the spill size at about 14,000 barrels and said the affected pipeline segment had been isolated and the oil contained at the site with booms or barriers. It did not say how the spill occurred. Quote, "People are sometimes not aware of the havoc that these things can wreak until the disaster happens," said Zach Bistora, who lobbies the Kansas legislature for the Sierra Club's state chapter. Concerns that spills could pollute waterways spurred opposition to plans by TC Energy to build another crude oil pipeline in the Keystone system, the 1,200-mile Keystone XL, which would have cut across Montana, South Dakota, and Nebraska. Critics also argued that using crude from Western Canada's oil sands would worsen climate change, and President Joe Biden's cancellation of a U.S. permit for the project led the company to pull the plug last year. In 2019, the Keystone Pipeline leaked an estimated 383,000 gallons of oil in eastern North Dakota. Jane Klebe, who founded the Bold Nebraska Environmental and Landowner Rights Group that campaigned against the Keystone XL, said there have been at least 22 spills along the original Keystone Pipeline since it began service in 2010. She said federal studies have shown the type of heavy tar sands oil the pipeline carries can be especially difficult to clean up in water because it tends to sink. Quote, all oil spills are difficult, but tar sands in particular are very toxic and very difficult, so I'm awfully concerned, said Klebe, who is also the Nebraska Democratic Party chair. But the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency said there were no known effects yet on drinking water wells or the public, and the oil didn't move from the creek to larger waterways. Randy Hubbard, the Washington County Emergency Management Coordinator, said there were no evacuations ordered because the break occurred in rural pasture land. TC Energy said it had set up environmental monitoring at the site, including around-the-clock air quality monitoring. Quote, our primary focus right now is the health and safety of on-site staff and personnel, the surrounding community, and mitigating risk to the environment, a company statement said. Oil prices briefly surged at midday Thursday amid news of the spill, with the cost of a barrel of oil for near-term contracts rising by nearly 5%, and above the cost of oil contracts further into the future. That typically suggests anxiety in the market over immediate supply. A U.S. Energy Information Administration spokesperson said the Keystone Pipeline moves around 600,000 barrels of oil per day from Canada to Cushing, Oklahoma, where it can connect to another pipeline to the Gulf Coast. That's compared to the total of 3.5 million to 4 million barrels of Canadian oil imported into the U.S. every day. Past Keystone spills have led to outages that lasted about 2 weeks, but this outage could possibly be longer because it involves a body of water, said analyst at RBC Capital Markets in a note to investors. Depending on the spill's location, it's possible that a portion of the pipeline could restart sooner, they said. Quote, it's something to keep an eye on, said Patrick DeHaan, head of petroleum analysis at GasBuddy, which tracks gasoline prices. Quote, it could eventually impact oil supplies to refiners, which could be severe if it lasts more than a few days. End quote. The spill was 5 miles northeast of Washington, the county seat of about 1,100 residents. Paul Stewart, an area farmer, said part of it was contained on his land using yellow booms and a dam of dirt. The spill occurred in Mill Creek, which flows into the Little Blue River. The Little Blue feeds the Big Blue River, which flows into Turtle Creek Lake, north of Manhattan, home of Kansas State University. The EPA said the oil did not affect the Little Blue. Dan Thalman, publisher and editor of the Washington County News, a weekly publication, said crews were creating a rock path to the creek because recent rains made fields too soft to move in heavy machinery. Quote, gosh, the traffic past my house is unbelievable. Trucks after trucks after trucks, said Stewart, who took down an electric fence he'd finished putting up Wednesday, fearing it might be knocked down and dragged into a field. Chris Panbacker said the pipeline runs through her family's farm. She and her husband drove north of their farmhouse and across a ridge over Mill Creek. Quote, we looked at it from both sides, and it was black on both sides, said Panbacker, a reporter for the Marysville Advocate newspaper. Junior Roop, the sexton of a cemetery near the spill site, said people could smell the oil in town. Quote, "It was about like driving by a refinery," he said.
This is Jane. I'm reading for the OA for Saturday, December 10th. To your good health. When to start Paxlovid. Dear Dr. Roach, I first tested positive for COVID 8 days ago. Should I start Paxlovid now? Answer. This medicine has made a huge reduction in the number of people who get so sick from COVID that they need to be hospitalized, but only when used properly. This means it has to be used at the right time, ideally within 24 hours of getting sick and certainly within 5 days. It's not likely to be of any help to you 8 days after symptom onset. The medicine is of most value to people who are at high risk of severe COVID. This includes people who are unvaccinated, over 65, and people with high-risk conditions such as advanced HIV, organ transplantation, or other severe problems with the immune system, including cancer chemotherapy and similar powerful drugs used for autoimmune disease. Healthy, younger, vaccinated people with mild to moderate symptoms initially are at low risk for severe COVID. As of the time of this writing, with the Omicron strains currently circulating, and do not much benefit from Paxlovid.
Dear Abby, widowed mom's nonstop calls wearing down her only child. Dear Abby, I am an only child, and I love my mother. My father passed away after a short illness 3 years ago, leaving my mother a widow. My problem is, she calls me multiple times a day. I'm not one of those women whose mom is my best friend or someone who enjoys talking on the phone. If I don't answer, she keeps calling back. She calls while I'm getting ready for work, on the way to work, while I'm at work, or on the way home, etc. I know I may regret it one day, but I don't have the energy for all her daily calls, which are basically her asking me 50 questions. I don't talk to my own grown children on a daily basis, like she calls me. I have reached the point that I dread it and at times ignore her calls. I have encouraged her to branch out, hang out with other widows, meet new friends, or join groups. But because of COVID, she's hesitant. I don't want to be ugly to her, but the more she does this, the more anxious I get. I have also asked her to just text me so I can respond when I'm available, but she says she just doesn't think about that as an option. She's a very sweet woman, but she is stressing me out. Is it me or her? Please help me so I don't ruin this relationship. As an only child, am I being selfish? Inundated in the South. Dear Inundated, it isn't you, it is her. Your mother is doing this because she feels lonely, anxious, and vulnerable, and may have forgotten how to socialize as an individual without your father. The COVID restrictions added to the problem because people were discouraged from hanging out in groups. After 3 years, it is not selfish to create boundaries with her. Tell her you will speak to her once a day. Then screen your calls and talk with your mom when you aren't stressed and have a few minutes to spend in conversation. Dear Abby, my husband and I have visits from family several times a year. I don't cook, or at least not a lot, just simple meals for my husband and me. We are 72 and 69. Visiting family members want to cook and discuss the latest natural foods they have grown or used. And I'm left feeling like they expect the same from me. We do occasionally take people to a nearby restaurant. It feels to me more like a look what I'm doing rather than casual conversation. Cooking, growing, etc. don't impress me because I have been there, moved on and am no longer interested in the achievement. How do I deal with these people? Beyond It in North Carolina. Dear Beyond It, you are under no obligation to alter the way you cook to suit these visitors. When your relatives start cooking and lecturing about nutrition and gardening, consider changing the subject. Or pop in some earbuds and listen to your favorite podcast or music. You may find that once they realize they have lost their audience, they'll find something else to talk about.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.